Well, it was nice to have an extra hour of sleep, wasn't it? We're going to talk about relationships this morning. I want to ask you to consider in your life, do you have any relationships that are broken with people that you care about, you used to speak with often, but those relationships are now fractured? To my ear, the most challenging and frightening line that Jesus ever spoke about human relationships, and that's saying something, is in the Gospel of Mark. It doesn't get a lot of attention, but here's what Jesus said. This is Mark 11, verse 25. Whenever you stand praying, forgive. If you have anything against anyone, so that your Father also who is in heaven may forgive you your trespasses. Let's focus on these words, Jesus' words, for a moment. Whenever, each time, no exceptions, don't forget this. Whenever you stand praying, prayer is a conversation between you and God. Forgive. We'll come back to this word. If you have anything, if you're holding on to anything against someone, a grievance, an offense, some resentment, Jesus says, if you have anything against anyone, it's pretty comprehensive, isn't it? Whenever you stand praying, that is focused on your relationship with God, call to mind your relationships with one another, the horizontal. And if you have anything against anyone, forgive. And then these words, so that your Father also who is in heaven may forgive you your trespasses. Now I hope this phrase catches your ear, because for thousands of years it has caught people's ears. Commentators go to great lengths to try to explain what Jesus isn't saying, and that's understandable, because Jesus certainly makes it sound like God's willingness to forgive us is conditioned upon our willingness to forgive others, that it's a conditional acceptance. Whereas the whole movement of the New Testament, the very definition of grace, is that God's love for us is not conditioned upon our behavior. It's not a in spite of, it's God's love is an in spite of love, not a because of love. And yet, Jesus draws our attention specifically to this topic of forgiveness, and he says, so that. He singles out forgiveness as a priority. Before you pray to my Father, forgive, so that your Father may forgive you. It's meant to be ear-catching, and attentive readers will remember that in his most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, in his most famous prayer, the Lord's Prayer, there's only one clause that Jesus singles out for further comment. Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. Jesus says, let's talk about that clause. And in that place, he draws a similar connection. One early church father commented that word as is the scariest word in the Bible. He wondered aloud how many of us consider that we may be calling down a curse upon ourselves every time we pray the Lord's Prayer. Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And Jesus draws a similar connection. Once again, we find ourselves saying, now Jesus didn't mean the words that he actually said, because his words are too strong for us, so we feel a need to blunt them. Forgiveness is a gift of God, unconditionally offered, despite our worthiness. But the proof that we have received this gift will be evidenced in our forgiving of one another. Forgiven people forgive people, and those who are not forgiving call into question whether we have in fact received this gift from God. And the link is so indivisible, Jesus dares to use the phrase, so that. To further appreciate what emphasis Jesus places upon our broken relationships, I want you to place Jesus' words in Mark 11 alongside Jesus' words in Matthew 5, where he also takes up the issue of our relationships with one another, but this time in the context of church. This is Matthew 5, verse 23. So if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Now what's striking here is not just the primacy Jesus places upon healing our relationships. You say, doesn't God come first? He says, yes, but before you offer your worship to God, leave your offering and go. First be reconciled, then come back to church. That's how important this is to Jesus. But notice the change. Jesus doesn't say, if you're offering your gift and there remember that you have something against someone. That's what he says in Mark 11. But in Matthew 5, did you notice the wording has changed? Did you notice the wording has changed? Jesus says, and there remember that someone has something against you. Not from your perspective, but from their perspective, because you probably see it differently. But Jesus says, what about as far as they're concerned? If you know that someone is holding on to something against you, then go first. And as far as it depends upon you, seek to be reconciled with them. So, take any broken relationship you have, someone who has hurt you or someone you have hurt, and you say, God, what is your will for me in this relationship? Well, you set Mark 11 against Matthew 5. In Mark 11, if you're holding on to something against anyone, it's your move. In Matthew 5, if you're aware of anyone holding on something against you, it's your move. If you are a follower of Jesus and you have a broken relationship, it's your move. I'm afraid to tell us. The Word of God says, this is Romans 12, verse 18, if it is possible, as far as it depends upon you, strive to live at peace with everyone. Even when they did wrong, do not repay evil for evil. Never seek revenge, forgive. And forgiveness is so powerful, it is almost a single word summary of the gospel. It encapsulates in one word what God has done for us, and what he calls us to do for one another in one word. Now, I haven't been in Evansville long, so please forgive an outsider for making an observation. It is striking to me how many churches in our city have been started over conflicts that remain unhealed. Everywhere I go, it's striking. We stand in our churches and proclaim week after week that the gospel is so powerful that humanity can be reconciled to God, and yet, in plain sight of all, we remain unreconciled to one another and seem to just go about our business. And I've wondered, is this contradiction not troubling? Is the lack of forgiveness among us not concerning? If we dare to take Jesus seriously. See Mark 11, verse 25, and Matthew 5, verse 23. So one of my favorite teachers, Dale Bruner, summarizes, the Lord does not want to talk with a disciple who does not want to talk to another person. Whew. That's a guy preaching to lose his job every Sunday. You say, oh, I forgive them. I'm not so sure. See, oftentimes I think we say it to avoid the pain of ever having to go through it. Because if you've ever done it, you know nothing is more difficult than forgiving someone. But if you want to know if you've forgiven someone, my mentor, Ken Sandy, says, true biblical forgiveness can be summed up by a decision to make four promises. Four promises. I will not dwell on this incident. I will not bring up this incident again and use it against you. I will not talk to others about this incident. And four, I will not let this incident stand between us or hinder our personal relationship. Now, we could nuance those a bit, but I'm afraid they hold up. Can you stand under those tests? Even for God, forgiveness is not the end. It is a means to an end. God doesn't say, I forgive you, but I don't want to have anything else to do with you. Forgiveness is a means. The end is reconciliation. Forgiveness desires, as far as it depends upon you, to heal the relationship. Now, to be clear, reconciliation may not be possible. And it may not be wise or loving to stay in a relationship that enables destructive patterns. And yet I ask again, are we not troubled by the prevalence of broken relationships among God's people? Are we not troubled by the lack of forgiveness among the Jesus people? I mean, what if Jesus was serious about how serious he takes our unforgiveness? See, I think we know what forgiveness means. I think we can feel it in our bones. Not having held against us what deserves to be, but is released and undeservedly so. If that has ever happened to you in your life, then you understand what Hamilton was singing about in that great song, It's Quiet Uptown. You remember the climax of the song, what he says? Forgiveness. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? So what are we doing in our churches? We spend 30, 35 minutes explicating a passage whose meaning is plain to any junior high schooler. Stop talking about it. Stop worshiping. Leave your gift. Go and be reconciled. If you're holding on to something, or if you know someone is holding on to something against you, it's your move. It's your move. You know, I think that's enough for today. I really do. Isn't it? Isn't it enough? But I wanted to start with an extended reflection on the words of Jesus, because we've been making our way through the 12 steps. Yes, those 12 steps. Our thesis is that the church today needs to recover the wisdom it once passed on to the recovery community if the church is going to be healthy today. And today we come to steps 8 and 9. Experientially, step 1 is the most difficult, admitting we're powerless. But practically, steps 8 and 9 are the most challenging. So I prefaced them with these words of Jesus, because as hard-hitting as they are, I want you to see this is not the wisdom of AA and Bill Wilson. This is the wisdom of Jesus for his people, calling us, as far as it depends upon us, to live at peace. Step 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9. Made direct amends to such persons whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I must tell you, I do not like these steps. I do not like them. Why would I want to do that? Says anyone who hears these steps for the first time. Well, here's one reason. You know, I know a lot of people in a lot of churches, perhaps in this community, who will hear, not my words, but who will hear Jesus' words in Mark 11 and Matthew 5, and yet will walk out remaining stuck in our patterns that leave us shackled in fear. Similarly, I've known a lot of people in recovery going to meetings for years who just can't seem to break free. What's the problem? Why are we not healed? Well, more often than not, in recovery, we've tried to bypass the discomfort of steps 8 and 9. In the church, we've tried to bypass Jesus' words on the necessity of healing our relationships. One of the best ways of appreciating the healing freedom on the other side of step 8 is imagining what it would feel like being on the other side of someone coming to you with their step 8. I have never met anyone who hasn't yearned to hear from someone a version of these words. I am so sorry about what's happened between us. For a long time, I blamed you. I thought it was your fault and your problem. But now I see how my own woundedness contributed to what's happened between us. And instead of taking ownership for my part in the conflict, I just pointed the finger at you, blaming you. I even used your willingness to take responsibility as an excuse not to take responsibility myself. And then I kept blaming you for my pain that I now see was self-inflicted. Please forgive me. Step 8 is not a gambit. You can't go into it expecting anything beyond taking ownership of your own side. And I say this because in my own journey, how often my wife has heard me say, I just need them to see, or if they would only realize and say, and I've learned that if you're waiting on them or needing something from them to let go of what you've been holding on to, all you're doing is delaying your own healing. If you want to be healed, you have to let go of needing those who hurt you to realize how unfair or wrong they have been. Granted, that would make it easier to forgive. But if you wait for them, you might be waiting a long time. And even if they did come to you, that wouldn't undo what's happened. You have to separate your healing from other people's choices. As my wife says, you know you're ready to forgive someone. You know you're ready to forgive someone when you no longer need anything from them. Step 8 is not a gambit to get them to admit something. They're not doing these steps. You are. They're not on the journey to wholeness. God have mercy on them. You are. Step 8 is about owning your part in any broken relationship and stopping there. It's recognizing in 99.9% of conflicts, oh yes, you do have a part. There are two steps to step 8. First, we are to make a list of all the people that we have harmed. Let me explain that. Make a list of all the people that we have harmed. Financially, sexually, emotionally, harmed their reputation, harmed their livelihood. There's another list that's much easier for us to catalog the people who've hurt us. You're on the list! But our healing not only calls for us to release the people who've hurt us, it calls for us to take responsibility for the people that we have hurt. Step 8, it's not about how to deal with difficult people. The difficult people we'll be talking about in step 8 is ourselves. And we might as well admit it that our ego greatly resists undertaking step 8. We're much more comfortable making a list of those who have hurt us. We do not want to accept fault. We do not want to admit blame. We are attuned quite sincerely to seeing ourselves as the true victim of the drama. It comes naturally to defend ourselves and point the finger at them. But like Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, step 8 is not concerned with what they did or what they said. As my counselor would often say to me, you know what, they're not here, so let's talk about you. I did not like my counselor. Thank God he didn't need me to like him. But he was relentless on this point, and he taught me something, that healing begins and ends with this. You take ownership of your side of the street. Take ownership of your side of the street. You stay on your side of the street, and you only sweep your side of the street. Anyone who's ever tried to do this knows how hard it is. Bill Wilson once wrote, "It is a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us." I do not like this man either. These are hard words. But similarly, he was encouraging us to take responsibility. for our own healing, to stop blaming other people for the way we feel. Why would I want to do that? Because if you find yourself awash in regret, guilt, and shame, step 8 is the way through. Whenever you're inclined to hold on to a grievance, what can I do? You can take ownership of your side of the street. You can stay on your side of the street and only sweep your side of the street. Step 8 is not about how to set boundaries with difficult people, as important as that can be. But again, the difficult person here happens to be you. Write down the names of the people that you have hurt. These are people, so write down their names. Call to mind their faces. Then, best as you can, write down, recall how you hurt them. Why do I need to do this? The desired outcome is not to flood you with a torrent of shame, but I will tell you this will be quite painful. And I'll also tell you that pain is a part of your healing. Part of your healing is letting yourself feel, including how those whom you have hurt might have felt. You won't change without letting yourself feel pain. Pain is the agent of change. Remember, that's the whole reason you got into this addictive pattern in the first place, to distract, to numb, to soothe yourself from distressing emotions. So it stands to reason that healing will always involve letting yourself feel those emotions. But the end is this, so that you can finally be free of regret and guilt and shame. So, first part of step 8, made a list of all the people that we had harmed. Second part, and became willing to make amends to them all. I like the humility of the second part because it's acknowledging how hard this is. I'm not asking you to do it right now. I'm just asking you to become willing to make amends. It's not a word we use much. Amends. Seek to mend. A friend of mine in the program says, amends is a way of acknowledging, no more I'm sorries. No more I promise to do betters. Because words are cheap. And we know often we say I'm sorry to avoid the pain involved in mending the relationship or the difficulty in seeking the deep help we need ourselves. In biblical times, amends was a way of saying that if you killed someone's oxen, i.e. their means of livelihood, that sincere forgiveness would be exhibited by willingness to replace that oxen. Amends. Or as Bill referenced Zacchaeus, it's the tax collector Zacchaeus in the Gospel of Luke saying to Jesus, if I've cheated anybody of anything, I will pay back 4 times that amount. When the offense is objective, you repay it best as you can. But in our relationships, often the offense is subjective, a betrayal, a wound, words that cannot be unspoken. Well, how do you make amends then? Well, an acronym I've learned from my friend Rick Blackman helps me with the art of amends. You can take this with you. He uses the acronym CRAFT, C-R-A-F-T, CRAFT. Conversation, recall, apology, forgiveness, talk. Very quickly, I'll run through those. Conversation. You're not ready to have this conversation while you're still harboring anger. You should never seek to make amends with someone you haven't forgiven first. And that often requires a great deal of private work before you ever come face to face with this person. My teacher taught me to pray through the Lord's Prayer each day, and when I came to this phrase, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors, to call to mind those whom I have such difficulty forgiving. A self-aware person will say, I'm not ready to talk about this. And an even more self-aware person will admit, I know that I'm supposed to forgive, but right now I'm just so angry. And I'm working through this, and I need more time. But our unreadiness, that's not about them, that's about you. Okay? But when we're ready, not needing anything from them, we can sit down. Conversation. Seeking first to understand. Here's my understanding of what I did, but help me understand the ways I've hurt you. R, recall. Here's what happened, best as I can remember it. Remembering that our memories are not reliable, that we are all prone to self-serving memory bias, and certainly our anger has distorted our memory for both of us. But the goal here is not to get your side out, it's to hear from them. If you're offering your gift at the altar and there, remember your brother or sister has something against you, you're creating a space where they can articulate what they've been holding against you, what you did from their perspective and how it made you feel. Of course it's from their perspective. But please don't interrupt or correct them. That's not how I remember it. A, apology. Boy, a good apology is hard to find. Your goal here is to take ownership. To take ownership, to name as specifically as you can. And you might need their help. Because part of the problem is you honestly don't see it. So, apology receiver, stop expecting them to read your mind. How could you not know? Well, that's part of the problem. You didn't know. So, apology giver, I'm not asking you to cop to things you didn't do. But you can validate their feelings without necessarily agreeing with them. You own all that you can without minimizing or defending yourself. No ifs in a good apology. I'm sorry if I offended you is not a good apology. A good apology will leave you feeling terribly exposed. You say, what about their side of the street? We do not bring up the other person's mistakes. This is not the occasion to list what you forgive them for. You stay on your side of the street. You own your side of the street. And you sweep your side of the street. F, forgiveness. Asking someone to forgive you after you've heard how you hurt them is a supreme act of vulnerability. And I will tell you, they may not forgive you. And part of your sincerity in making amends is not insisting that they do. That is between them and God. As far as you are concerned, forgive. Forgiving them does not mean they win. Lewis Smead said it best. To forgive is to set a prisoner free and to discover that that prisoner was you. If they cannot see their part, you are not the one to help them to see. Their inability to take ownership has kept them locked in a prison. And that should evoke our compassion. To the one receiving, while the sincerity of the one offering forgiveness can be measured by the willingness to make amends, your willingness to forgive cannot be conditioned by a reparation. I'll say that clearer. You can't say, well, I'll forgive you if. No. Forgiveness that is conditional is not biblical forgiveness. That's not how God forgives us. Thank God. And finally, T, talk. You articulate your future intentions. Amends that doesn't include a commitment not to repeat the behavior is not sincere. I'm not just talking about it. I'm demonstrating steps I'm taking to seek personal healing. You stay on your side of the street. You only sweep your side of the street. And I'll have to tell you, the thing about saying on your side of the street is there will be people on your list whom you are sincerely convinced harmed you far more egregiously than you would harm them. I have rarely seen a conflict where each side did not share some responsibility. And you might genuinely feel like, okay, percentages aren't helpful, but in this case they are. You may genuinely feel like, all right, this is 10% mine, 90% them, all right. You take 100% of your 10% and you stop talking. That's what staying on your side of the street is. Where relationships are broken and remain broken, 99% of the time, each thinks the real problem is the other, and they're stuck at pointing fingers. Step 8 says, it's your move. You say, but my vulnerability might be used against me. Yes. Yes. You may own 110% of your 10% and hear, thank you for apologizing to me. I'm glad you finally see the truth of what really happened. I forgive you. And you're going to want to scream, and is there anything that you would like to add? But you're not going to say that. Because you are not the one to help them to see. And they remain a prison of their own making. Because they refuse to take responsibility for their own part. As for you, you take Jesus seriously. When you stand praying, forgive. If you have anything against anyone. And Jesus calls us to forgive, even those who don't think they need our forgiveness, as a way of Jesus caring for both of us. Because Jesus wants you to be free of regret and guilt and shame, from the shackles of the past, from self-loathing, from the regret we feel over our genuine mistakes. You say, how am I ever going to be free of that? You know what? They're not here, so let's talk about you. You take ownership of your side of the street. You stay on your side of the street. And you only sweep your side of the street. You know, if we did this, it would change our lives. It would make us unoffendable people. I mean, if you're truly in touch with the garbage on your side of the street and know that you've been forgiven of it, you won't mind hearing another person point out your garbage. You don't know the half of it. That is a free and undefended life. But in my experience, if you go in owning your side of the street without qualification or explanation, seeking to understand, taking ownership, apologizing, seeking forgiveness, most of the time, most people will respond, not just with kindness, but often with some version of taking ownership themselves. You can't expect this, them to take ownership, but often they will. Ken Sandy calls this the golden result. He says, people will often treat you the way you treat them. Blame others, he says, and they will usually blame you. You say, maybe the person that I've hurt, I can no longer speak with them. They're not reachable. I don't know where they are. Maybe they're dead. Well, you may not be able to speak with them, but I'll tell you what you can do. You can write a letter. You can write a letter. Please forgive me for. And if it's a letter, because it's a letter, you can say, and I forgive you for. The most powerful letters you ever write will be the ones that are never mailed. And it might be read over a tombstone. You can write a letter. But they don't deserve it. Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. What if God had said that to you? But they were more at fault. Well, they're not doing the steps. They're not on the journey to wholeness. You are. Now, there can be occasions where it's not kind or wise to go to those we have offended. I wanted you to know that at the family reunion last year, I spit on your cheeseburger and then I watched with delight as you ate it. This is what step 9 concerns. Pastor, I just wanted you to know as we're leaving the church that I never really liked you or your sermons. I don't even like the way you look or that thing you do when you preach. Whew, glad that's off my chest. Don't cleanse your conscience at the expense of injuring others, says step 9. There's a passage in the big book at the end of the instructions for doing the 9th step that describes what we can expect to experience once we've made progress on our list. I mark these words because I treasure them. Open quote. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will finally comprehend that word, serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Our feelings of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in others. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will have changed. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us, and we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. You know, despite his doubts, Bill Wilson couldn't stop talking about God. I can't imagine doing the eighth step without the gospel. So the gospel tells us that God too made a list of those who had hurt his heart. But you know what God did what God did for those who killed his son? Well, he died in our place to put our names on another list. And today our names are written in the book of life. And because our names, your name is written there, because you were safe and no longer need fear, condemnation, you can risk going to another and even hearing how you may have hurt them. Not to earn God's forgiveness, God is always willing to forgive, but because Jesus asked you to go. Whether you're holding on to someone or you know someone is holding on to something against you, not because God is unwilling to forgive you, but to set a prisoner free. Forgiveness. Can you imagine what it's like to live forgiven, free of regret, guilt, and shame? Well, you'll only be able to imagine it to the measure you extend God's forgiveness to others. Your move. Well, let me pray for us. Lord, these are hard words, but Lord, help us to hear. These are not words from Bill Wilson or a poor preacher, Jesus, that these are your words. And your words for us are words of life and they're words of care. And you speak them to us and over us to help us. Lord, help us here in this invitation that you're inviting us to learn what serenity and peace really mean. We pray in your name, Jesus. Amen.